Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Tomatoito Boxing Show, and this is the recap for Conor Benn and Peter Dobson, a fight that took place this past Saturday. We did the preview episode, and I'm curious to hear from you as to how far off you think I was, and how did you see the fight? Basically, how we saw it is how it played out, right? A flat-footed Peter Dobson who came out, who was not afraid to inch forward, but was also not afraid to fight on his back foot. However, very little action from his behalf. This turned out to be a one-sided affair for Conor Benn. And, well, I'm curious to hear from you guys. Shoot me a comment. Shoot me a message. Leave me a comment on the Instagram page. You guys know that I run the podcast out of the Instagram page. And from there, you can link over to the main site where all the episodes, you'll find all the episodes. Or however it is that you currently listen to me and you listen to the Tomatoito Show, is whether it's Spotify or iHeartRadio, Apple, what have you, leave me a comment. Shoot me a message. You could find me on X as well. Let's start engaging on these fights because I want to see how far off. I want to get some feedback as to how far off I am analyzing these fights. And I also want to see what you guys are seeing. What am I missing? What is it that I missed during the fight, or what am I missing when we're going into these fights? Is it a resume? Is it a certain fighter? Is it a certain style that maybe a fighter found success in that you may assimilate to the fighter stepping into the ring against whoever it is that we're analyzing on that given weekend? So I want to hear from you guys. With that said, listen, I saw this fight that, yes, it looked like it was a stay busy tune-up fight. I didn't see Conor Benn losing this fight. I was seeing this as a tougher fight for Conor Benn than what people were making it out to be. Because Peter Dobson doesn't have the name, doesn't have the following, doesn't have the backing, lesser known. We dove a little bit on the preview episode into his resume. And on paper, professionally, it looked like he was fairly inactive. Yet he had been active in a different format, which is that of the Team Combat League, which is a new organization that launched mid last year, and they're about to go into season two here in the coming months. Peter Dobson participates there. It's a whole different format. And because of that, and because of that activity, even though he has a losing record there at 3-7, he's been active. Meanwhile, Conor Benn came off of that fight out in Orlando late last year against Orozco, in which he was successful in a 10-round fight. He got rounds under his belt, but he didn't look that great. And the criticisms came out that his punching power had left him. It looks very explosive when he's landing these punches. It looks very damaging. It looks incredible when he throws these punches, Conor Benn. They look like knockout punches, yet they're not eliminating these opponents. So is it credit to the opponent? I would say so. Is it a discredit to Conor Benn? Maybe having been involved or having been guilty of participating in certain substances that may have given him an edge leading up to how he's looking nowadays? Or is it just that the opposition is getting better and tougher? The claims are out there. People are pointing a finger, including one Devin Haney after the fight, who made the comment. I don't have the tweet in front of me, but he posted on X, and it was something to the sort of Conor Benn left his punching power at the needle. Something to that extent, which definitely got under the skin of Conor Benn. He brought it up at the post-fight press conference. And, well, a lot of positives and negatives to walk away from. When we look at the fight, it was a fairly one-sided affair. There's positives and negatives. Let's look at the positives. A fairly one-sided affair as far as the fans witnessed. Whether you were in person or if you're watching it on TV as I was, it was a fairly one-sided affair. The judges' scorecards also backed that claim up. It was a fairly one-sided affair. So, What are the positives that we walk away with? We had one judge, Tim Cheatham, gave Conor Benn 119-109. David Sutherland and Steve Weisfeld gave Conor Benn 118-110 apiece. One-sided. Peter Dobson has talent. Peter Dobson is a slow, methodical fighter. He tends to be accurate when he throws. He lands. He possesses power. He has pop behind his punch. But he unleashes very little. His work rate is close to none. Very inactive, likes to wait, likes to sit and wait. Meanwhile, he's receiving damage. He's getting hit. He shoulder rolls a bit. He blocks. But he's getting hit. He continues to inch forward. And it may... I don't know what his strategy was. I don't know if that was his game plan. To let Conor Benn just tire himself out. Throw everything his way, and then start capitalizing in the later rounds. We saw Peter Dobson have success when he decided to fight, whether it was a looping right hand or a haymaker, whether it was a few uppercuts that he managed to land at close quarters, whether it was doubling up on his jab, or countering Conor, which is something we called on the preview episode, that Conor likes to throw looping, wide-angled punches. He doesn't have the greatest footwork. He stands fairly wide. So with anybody pressuring him, which is what we saw Orozco do late last year in his comeback fight, Orozco was a come-forward, all-action type fighter who was willing to get hit, play by the gambit, willing to risk getting hit in order for him to land something of meaning. And Orozco played that card, and he was finding Conor Benn quite often. And it became a big back-and-forth type of fight. A difficult fight for Conor Benn. But it was his comeback fight. He got the decision. He got the nod. He got the rounds under his belt. He was back active. That was the narrative then. This was a 12-round fight. Something that Conor Benn had never accomplished. And looking at this on paper and the resume and the body of work that Peter Dobson had done, it seemed like he was going to be inching forward, similar to what Orozco fought like, catching Conor Benn, or at least pressuring Conor Benn. And we saw and called, based on the body of work of Peter Dobson, that he was unafraid fighting on his back foot. He's pretty much a flat-footed fighter who will inch forward and will step back when need be. Does not like to give up too much ground. So he rather faint side to side rather than run and get on his back foot or get on his bicycle. He rather take the hits and faint and stay in the pocket than to give up ground. We saw a little bit of all that against Conor Benn. The positives were that Conor Benn finally made it to a 12-round fight. He could say that he's a 12-round fighter now. At the post-fight press conference, he says that this was like a sparring match. It was fairly easy for him. He could have kept going. His stamina's there. His stamina's great. He now can call himself a 12-round fighter. He had 12 rounds against Orozco, 12 rounds here, and solid rounds. He worked for him. It wasn't a back-and-forth slugfest, except for a few moments here and there where we thought Peter Dobson was going to start picking up the pace, and then he would let off the gas. So the positives for Benn, he's got 12 rounds under his belt now. And he didn't look like he was dying at the end of the fight. he still looked fairly complete. Of course, that goes to say as to the level of opposition and to the pushback that he had, that he experienced, which was close to none. So that's a positive for Conor Benn. He's got 12 rounds under his belt now. He got to execute his game plan, which I'm also going to bring this up when we talk about the negatives. He got to exploit and utilize his entire arsenal. He threw everything at Peter Dobson. He tried different things. Tried tucking and moving, bobbing and weaving, doubling up, mixing it up. He put everything to work that he possesses, which was also a huge positive, right? Because he was able to utilize his entire arsenal and actually bring it out in a live setting rather than just in practice or sparring. He's active, successfully completed a fight, no injuries, no major damage that he incurred. He should be back fairly soon. And if he continues at this pace, he should be able to have at least another 2, maybe 3 fights this year if he chooses to stay on this trajectory and remain active. What are the negatives? Well, we mentioned the message that Devin Haney put out, that he left his strength, his punching power in the needle. That's a tough claim. But let's be honest, he hasn't fought the caliber of fighters that are anywhere near the fighters that he's been calling out. He's been calling out for Boots Ennis. He's been calling out Crawford. He's calling out Haney. But you're fighting Antonio Orozco's and Peter Dobson's. He wants the smoke, but he's not there yet. He threw his entire arsenal at Peter Dobson and wasn't able to stop him. He executed his game plan to the T and wasn't able to stop this fighter. This is a veteran, crafty, durable fighter in Peter Dobson. That's okay. He won the fight and he won it in a fairly one-sided manner. For Devin Haney, who I'm a huge fan of, and you guys know that, you guys could follow my catalog and look back. I'm very, very big on Devin Haney and the amount of and what he's done from when he was getting shunned and pushed to the side, that he was a nobody and he was a young kid, just his dad trying to talk him into the big fights. Look at what he's done and accomplished in a matter of 3 years. It's on top of the world. But he doesn't possess the pop that he's accusing Conor Benn of having lost. Yet, Conor Benn, the destroyer, who was stopping and dropping and throwing his opponents all over the ring like a Chris Algieri, just flying from left to right, going under the ropes, the promise was there that this was going to be the second coming of his father and continue where Nigel left off. It hasn't translated that way, at least not in these last two fights. Both, which have not been at welterweight, even though he wants to campaign at welterweight. A 153-pound fight and a 150-pound fight. The negatives are that his punching power is not there like it was just a few fights back. The negatives are that he's not improving. He's fast, he's dynamic, he's explosive. But he continues to get hit. He's getting hit and he was hit on Saturday by a slow Peter Dobson, who was simply able to time him perfectly. This is a veteran, crafty boxer with decent pedigree who was able to figure him out. What's going to happen when you face the top dogs? Should you get there? It gets even trickier. That's when those analogies of playing checkers, a checker player stepping into the realm of a chess player. He was getting hit, and he was getting hit flush on the reset. He would land his punches, and when he's trying to get out of the way and stepping back, his face is fully exposed, his right side completely exposed, and Dobson would reach, lunge with a haymaker, right hand punch, and land it cleanly on the cheek, cleanly on the temple. When he fights in the pocket, he's getting hit with uppercuts. So, he hasn't really improved in the last 3, 4, 5 fights. It has not. We are not seeing a different Conor Benn. We're just glad to see him, and we tune in to see what he's going to look like. And it's great that he's active. It's great that he's getting rounds under his belt. But if he doesn't fix those issues where they were not apparent when his punching power was there, he lands clean. He's an accurate puncher. So when he does land and he drops and stops his prior opponents, or stopped his prior opponents, he would not get that pushback that he's been getting in the last 2 fights. He wouldn't experience that, so the flaws were not exploited. But these last 2 fighters, in Orozco and Dobson, have faced a similar version of the Conor Benn that was stopping everybody in his resume before these last 2 fights. And have exposed certain flaws that he didn't fix from the Orozco fight to this one, in which when he steps back, he completely exposes himself. When he lunges forward, he exposes the center. He puts so much strength into these punches, and he loops them to where he's completely exposing his chin, his face, his body. Dobson managed to exploit that several times. If Dobson was more of an active fighter and better at applying pressure, he would have found success against Conor Benn if he was a better fighter. This is Peter Dobson. He provided good work for Conor Benn. In that sense, matchmaking was perfect for Conor Benn, because he managed to get a tough opponent, a durable opponent, who he was able to try everything that he wanted to with. He got to exploit and exhaust his entire arsenal in Conor Benn against a Dobson who took it and gave him a little pushback from time to time, but nothing that would ever really pose danger for Conor Benn. Dobson gets the first loss of his career, walking into a 16-0 record, now 16-1. Conor Benn improves to 23-0. The curiosity lies in how he's going to look in his next outing, and if he's going to fix those issues, if he's going to start protecting himself on the reset, on the exit, because he's completely exposed. He fights so cocky and so confident, thinking that he's not going to get dropped or not going to get hit, because he hasn't experienced that yet. But if he fights a top 20 or a top 10 fighter, Virgil Ortiz would expose that. That would be an amazing fight to see, because both of them, I feel, are in the same position or in similar positions in their careers, having experienced long layoffs. Here's a Virgil Ortiz who just came back successfully to open up 2024 and only got one round out of it after a long training camp. Here's Conor Benn, who experienced a long layoff and has gotten 22 rounds under his belt in his last two outings. But he seems to have lost something that he possessed prior to these last two fights. Virgil Ortiz, we don't really know where he's at, but he's campaigning at 154 now. Conor Benn is competing between 147 and 160, but just participated at 154 against Orozco and 150 against Dobson. That would be an ideal fight, and I believe, if you go back, check for me. I didn't get a chance to double check, but you guys could humble me on this one. Check the list that I put out, because I put out the 24 dream fights for 2024, an episode that I put out earlier this year, or to kick off the year. I believe I had that fight on there, Conor Benn against Virgil Ortiz. I feel that these two fighters are in similar trajectories and similar places in their career with somewhat similar records. The upside is there for both of them. There's a lot of hype and a lot of expectations for both of them. I think Virgil Ortiz would stop Conor Benn. But I think it'd be really interesting if Conor Benn is able to fix these couple issues that I'm mentioning. If he's able to start utilizing more lateral movement rather than just in and out, he might be able to avoid a lot of these punches that come down range when he's trying to exit the pocket. If he starts putting his gloves up a little bit instead of fighting with his gloves down at his hips, he might be able to eliminate getting hit so much. And by getting hit so much, lucky that Dobson is not more of an active pressure fighter, because anybody else that's a little bit better, higher pedigree boxer, or maybe just a more active style boxer, would possess a lot of problems for him. Would pose a lot of problems for Conor Benn. Those are the negatives that I walked away with. Nonetheless, listen, Conor Benn remains in the win column. Dobson, more than likely, this is going to be the trajectory that he's at. He's not a gatekeeper. He's just going to be a good, stay busy fighter for up-and-coming fighters in the level of opposition. Peter Dobson is going to be solid opposition for new prospects, especially blue chip prospects. He's going to provide very good work for, and more than likely he's going to stay active in the Team Combat League platform, which are one round fights in which he hasn't found much success in. He's a 3-7, holds a 3-7 record there, but he's going to remain in that platform competing there. And he's part of the New York team. So with that said, Conor Benn remains in the win column, remains unblemished, moves on to another fight. I hope, if you're a huge Conor Benn fan, you don't think I'm being too critical. I'm just picking apart the issues that I feel are going to be huge. They're going to be huge issues for him to face in a live setting if he fights a smarter fighter with higher pedigree and a better understanding. A more tactical, more strategic fighter is going to expose that, and they're going to catch on to that early on in the fight. And they're not going to be there to get hit with the bombs that he was landing on Dobson and Orozco. On the undercard, the preview episode, I ended up saying that the upside out of the whole card for me was one Emil Williams, who I wanted to keep an eye on, and he looked amazing. I'm a huge fan of Emil Williams, and he looked amazing. He stole the show, in my opinion. He stopped Armel Mbumba. Mbumba Yasa is the full last name. Armel Mbumba Yasa, who is a 10-0 fighter coming into this. And we broke this fight into details and specifics on the preview episode. You could go back and check that out if you want, and then come back and see how we saw it if you saw the fight, then you know exactly what I was talking about on the preview episode. You saw it, and it basically played out like that. Armel and Bumba ended up basically very little action on his behalf, just relying on his power punch. Amo Williams respected the power. He knew that there was power that Mbumba Yasa possessed, and he fought him from the outside. He moved fairly well. His footwork is great. His hand speed is great. His delivery is great. Very accurate. Pinpoint accuracy on behalf of Amo Williams. And he lands, which with such power and such presence that he's able to disrupt rhythms and inflict his game plan onto the opponent with such ease that Mbumba couldn't figure it out. So he just paced around, followed Amo Williams around, hoping to land that big punch. He did what he could, but he was just bested by the better boxer. The fighter with really good understanding, good ring generalship. Amo Williams improves to 16-0. He stopped Mbumba in the seventh round with an awesome, awesome follow-up, which was a left-right combination, which sent Mbumba under the ropes several feet, maybe about a good 8 to 10 feet, that he ended up sliding, flying back, basically, with his head ended up under the bottom rope. Amo Williams is brash. He talks, he mocks, he jokes around, but he's very humble in some interviews. He's a little bit of everything. You get a little bit of a full experience with Amo Williams, and he backs it up, and he's looking the part, and he's willing to fight any and all comers. He's ranked fairly high amongst the middleweights. Yes, he's young. He has a lot of work to do to be able to perfect his craft and become a full version of himself, but he's getting close. He's getting close to fighting at such a high level where he will be, once he reaches that, he will be within a couple fights of hitting his peak. He's already there. Impressive, impressive showing by Amo Williams. Hands the first loss of Mbumba Yasa's career to him. And he continues on his winning ways, 16-0 with 11 knockouts now. Somebody who's ranked basically within one spot of Amo Williams is a Phoenix native young fighter by the name of Elijah Garcia. Elijah Garcia, I believe, is ranked 6th, where Amo Williams is ranked 5th, or they're ranked 6th and 7th, something of that nature. And we've seen Elijah Garcia, who's a PBC fighter. He's been in numerous shows. We've seen him. I believe he was also on the undercard of Canelo and Charlo. So you could go back and look at Elijah Garcia. Similar records. I believe he's also 15-0 or 16-0 at the moment. That would be an amazing fight for both of these fighters. That would be an amazing fight where both of them are in similar stages of their careers at the moment. And they're both knocking on the door of a title, of title contention. They're starting to garner these smaller division titles. And they're within one or two fights from fighting for the full version title. Both middleweights. Both in really good spots, both possess similar power, but completely different styles. And it would make for such a fun fight where Amo tends to be more methodical and Elijah tends to hunt. Amo is probably the more accurate of the two fighters, but Elijah Garcia tends to mix up his attack in a more rounded approach, I should say. For some reason, that word left me. Elijah Garcia, Amo Williams would be the fight to make this year if by any chance they could do it. That would be a Matchroom PBC type agreement. But that would be an amazing fight for the fans. For us fans, Amo and Elijah Garcia is the fight to make at middleweight right now. And they're both right there knocking on the door of whoever happens to be the champion. We got Janibek, We got Lara, who's going to be active in the on the undercard of Sue and Thurman, defending his WBA title at 160. We have Carlos Adames, who's the mandatory for Jermall Charlo. And the reports currently are that Jermall is going to be fighting at 168, challenging Canelo Alvarez, avenging the loss of his brother. Those are the talks. Nothing confirmed as of this episode. Very interesting. So we'll close out this episode. Conor Benn remains on the win column. Let's see if he's able to fix these issues in his upcoming, in his next fight. Let's see if we see some improvement. If we do, then guess what? He's going to be problems for anybody that he faces in the future. He's got to start fixing those issues now, and he's got to do it quick because he's starting to call out the big names. He's been calling out the big names, but he's not there yet. And he's going to get exposed. So on his next fight, if he takes on somebody of the level of Orozco or Dobson, who is not quite at the top, but a good solid fighter or a contender, what have you, a journeyman. If you have a another solid journeyman to get under his belt and continue perfecting his craft, that would pay huge dividends for Conor Benn, not in the sense of getting rounds under his belt, but for him to actually display the improvements and get himself into a big fight, maybe by the close of the year. But if we see the same Conor Benn, then we're probably starting to see the Conor Benn who's reaching his ceiling, and he's going to be maybe in one or two fights that will be big money fights for him, and we'll start seeing the dwindling of his career. We've seen this before, and these are, there's fighters that are in that circle that we just see ascend, make noise, and then eventually disappear when they get exposed. Adrian Broner comes to mind. Adrian Broner did reach championship levels, though. So I'll leave you guys with that. Emma Williams, keep an eye on him in the middleweight division. Elijah Garcia, Emma Williams would be huge. Conor Benn, successful against Peter Dobson. Unlikely that we'll hear Peter Dobson in another big fight. But for Conor Benn, I don't know. Virgil Ortiz would be a fairly good fight and a big money fight to make. And Eddie Hearn could definitely get involved with both of them since Eddie Hearn already works with Golden Boy. So that would be very interesting. I'll leave you guys with that. Thank you for tuning in once again, and have yourselves a great, great night. Take care.